All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 7 Steps to Awakening, and thank you very much, Kate, for your sharing. It was wonderful, as always. Very clear, very straightforward and honest. I appreciate that. I'm only here for 30 minutes tonight because tonight is our monthly satsang, and tonight the satsang is with Craig Holiday. So what I'm going to do to get us started is just play kind of a short song, and then we'll just jump right in since we don't have much time. This song is a song. Last night Jasmine and I went to see Man of La Mancha, and this song, The Impossible Dream, of course, comes from that musical. So why don't we listen to it? Here we go, The Impossible Dream.
To dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go.
If you've ever seen The Man of La Mancha, I hadn't. I did not know the story. And the reason I went was because I knew this song came from it. And it was here locally. So I thought, okay, I'll go see. And, you know, it's interesting because it's about Don Quixote, who is actually a little bit insane, I guess, in the eyes of the world. But what his insanity does is it sees the what we would call the Christ in everyone. You know, it sees the nobility. He was a knight, and he saw, you know, like a prostitute, really a very common whore, as they would say, as a noble woman. You know, he saw people as nobility. He saw the gypsies as nobility, and this was his way of seeing. And of course, in the beginning, you know, people would take advantage of him and not like him and make fun of him, but his consistent seeing led to their loving him and loving what he saw in them, feeling like that he saw the real them, right? So, a wonderful little play. All right, so tonight I am going to be looking at quote 769 in the 7 Steps to Awakening. And if there's anybody who likes to read along in the journal, I am sharing that with you now. This is the first of the Sri Shankara quotes from the third step in the Seven Steps to Awakening. And this is the quote. You know, I never pre-read these things before I come and teach. I like it to be very spontaneous and very live, out loud contemplation. But it's so funny. Listen to these first few words. The body is the product of food. The body is the product of food. All right, so here we go. The body is the product of food and constitutes the material sheath. It depends on food and dies without it. It is a mass. It is a mass of skin, flesh, blood, bones, and uncleanliness. It is not fit to see as oneself, who is ever pure. You know, I remember John Mundy once. It might have been when he was here in Pueblo about 4 or 5 years ago. I went to his gathering here in Pueblo, and it might have been then, but I remember hearing John Mundy once talk about how really disgusting the body is. You know, all of the different fluids that come out of the body, you know, even when having sex, you know, the different body fluids, and just how, you know, how disgusting the body is. And it seems like Sri Shankara is taking that same approach right now. This body is the product of food and constitutes the material sheath. It depends on food and dies without it. It is a mass of skin, flesh, blood, bones, and uncleanliness. It is not fit to see as oneself, who is ever pure. It is not fit to see as oneself, who is ever pure. So before I go and look at the journal entry, I think that probably what jumps out at me the most is that this quote says it depends on food and dies without it. And of course, it's not just food. It depends on water and dies without it. It depends on air, oxygen, and dies without it. It depends on healthy cells, right? And if those cells turn what we call cancerous, it can die without healthy cells, right? And I think that's an important fact, whether we had, you know, disgusting blood, body fluids or not, disgusting scents that come from our body or not. I think the important thing is that the body dies. And I think it's really important that we ask ourselves, am I this body that dies? And in fact, that's really what happened to Ramana Maharshi when he had his awakening experience at age 17. He had been affected a few years earlier when his father died. And he, as they took his father and burned the body, he began to wonder about what dies. But then those of you who know Ramana Maharshi's story, you know there was that day when he had what some people might call a panic attack, but he was just doing his homework and all of a sudden the fear of death came over him. And intuitively he knew that he needed to investigate this. It's like he I think he said he knew he needed to solve this right now. And solve this right now meant he needed to know what dies and what lives. And what am I? And what most of us do, in fact, the vast majority of the people on the planet do, is we live with the assumption that I am this body. And we don't question that assumption. And of course, if that assumption is a wrong assumption, we're really missing out on something by assuming we are the body, which certainly has lots of needs, gets sick, and eventually dies. So it's worthwhile to inquire and to look and to discover if the body is in fact what I am. And I don't plan on doing this right now, but if you listen to the guiding light, then you know that on Wednesday, that's what we're going to do. On Wednesday, we will probably go into a meditative inquiry, and we will look to see if we can see if we are the body or if we are something else. Also, if you're in the Gentle Healing Group, then you know that yesterday and today, while contemplating workbook lesson 151, what I recommended in my tip is that workbook lesson 151 be contemplated along with Michael Langford's story about the theater, about people born in the theater, looking at the screen, assuming that the movie is reality. And that we begin to really question, haven't we really kind of done the same thing? You know, haven't we really assumed that the world that we look out on is reality? Haven't we really assumed that this body that we experience is reality? And haven't we even assumed that our thoughts are truthful or wisdom? And should we check these assumptions? Is it worth it to find out if that's true or not? What is the truth? Or are we happy with the possibility that we might be completely deluded about what reality is and about what we are? Is that okay, that we might be completely deluded? Or do we want to take the opportunity to investigate and find out for ourselves what the truth is? So maybe, because I've been contemplating this, of course, maybe this is why, in fact, I've been contemplating it both through the Gentle Healing Group and through my reading of the teachings, the spiritual teachings of Ramana Maharshi and the Guiding Light. They're both kind of doing the same thing. They're both leading to the same contemplation. So I suppose because I've been contemplating this in the past week, that's what I see when I read this quote. This body is the product of food and constitutes the material sheath, which Kathy has said the sheath is a close-fitting cover. And then she's asking the inquiry question, am I the material cover? Right? And Peace Pilgrim used to always say, I know I'm not this clay covering, right? This clay body. I know I'm not this. The body is the product of food and constitutes the material sheath. It depends on food and dies without it. It is a mass of skin, flesh, blood, bones, and uncleanliness or uncleanness. It is not fit to see as oneself. It is not fit to see as oneself who is ever pure. So why don't we look and see what I wrote in my journal. This is contemplated on March 4th, 2014. Here's what it says. I seem to see from this body. I cannot see what is behind me without turning my head. Oops, my phone wants me to do something. It's telling me that the satsang is beginning in 15 minutes. Let me turn that phone down. There we go. All right. I seem to see from this body. I cannot see what is behind me without turning my head. I cannot hear what is not within this body's range of hearing. I cannot touch what is not here near this body. Smelling is also limited by the body. I cannot smell anything that is not near enough to the body to be smelled. So am I limited? I only know one thing. When I asked this question, the heart whispered no, quietly, gently, and surely. I shall trust the heart over this physical experience. That is my heart's desire. That is what feels best. So that is what I shall do. You know, if we go back to Michael Langford's theater example, you know, if I am born and raised in a movie theater and, you know, maybe even as a little kid, you know, little kids maybe try to turn their head around, but maybe as a little kid, the parents are always, keep your head straight, you know, look straight ahead, you'll miss something. You know, it's very important, you don't miss a thing. And after a while, we're conditioned, right, to just look right straight ahead at the film in front of us. We've been told that's reality. We've been told that's very, very important. And we've been told that we need to pay attention to it. If that was the case, it might sound absolutely crazy, you know, after, you know, when you're 50 or 60 years old, after a lifetime of this, it might sound absolutely crazy to turn your head around, to get up out of your seat and to go investigating around and see where the movie comes from. Because you've been told all of your life that the movie is reality. And that it's very important, and you better pay attention, and you better not miss a thing, and you shouldn't turn your head away from the screen for a second. When I really look at that story, although that's a fictional story, what I can see is that all of my life, I have never genuinely questioned whether what I think is reality or not. And I can see that it is absolutely possible that the reason I believe everything I believe, including believing I am this body and that the world is reality, is because that's what I've always been taught. I can also see that if I had been taught from birth that this world is not reality, it's just a dream, it's just a temporary experience, that this body is not what I am, it's a temporary vehicle within this temporary experience, that I would have a completely different experience. If I had been taught from the very beginning to spend, you know, a period of time each day paying attention to awareness and noticing that's what I am, I would have a very different experience of myself. Now, one could argue, and in fact, if my dad was here, he might argue, so let's just use my dad as an example. My dad might argue that if I had been raised, that the world was not real, that the body was not what I am, and that awareness was what I am, that would be the illusion, right? That would have been the deluded lifetime, and I would have been living in a real world thinking it wasn't real. But for now, what I want to say is that I can see that I believe in the way I've been taught to believe, and if I had been raised to believe differently, I would believe differently. So I can see that believing and experiencing my beliefs does not verify truth. It only verifies conditioning. It only verifies believing. So how do we find out what's true? How do we know beyond a shadow of a doubt, beyond any believing at all, what's true? And Kathy is saying, can you say that one more time? I'm not certain what part you want me to say one more time, but I'll say this. I can see that all of my life, everyone in my life, has taught me that I am this body and that the world is real. Therefore, I believe it. I can also see that if I had been raised and from the very, very beginning, everybody in my life told me the world is not real, it's just a dream, it's a temporary experience, the body is not what I am, it's just a vehicle that is being used for this experience, and had taught me from the time I was very, very small to set and look at awareness every day and taught me that that's what I was, that I would have a different experience. I would believe the world was not real. I would believe I was not the body. I would believe that I was awareness. It would be completely different. But either way, we could argue that I would believe what I believed because it's what I was taught. So the question is, how do I know the truth? How do I know what's true? And for me, the answer begins with wanting to know what's true. The answer begins with that desire. If I don't have any curiosity about what's true, if all I want is to survive or to succeed in the way that I define survive or succeed, well, then that's what I'm going to focus my attention on. And that's, of course, what most people in the world are caught up in. But if I want to know the truth, no matter what it is, that's going to guide me differently. One of the things I'm going to do if I want to know the truth is I'm going to begin to question things to see if they are the truth. So, for example, I can question my perceptions. For example, starting with something very, very simple, one perception that I have is that the sun comes up in the east and sets in the west. The sun moves across the sky. Is that true? And if I investigate that, what I find out is it is not true, right? The sun stays in one place. It's permanent and unchanging. And it's the world that turns. I could begin to pay attention to, you know, let's pick a person. Let's say Dove. You know, we all know Dove. I can have perceptions of Dove. And I can question my perceptions of Dove. Are they true? You know, maybe especially if I get with like Kathy and Becky and, you know, somebody else who knows Dove, let's say Cheryl, and we all start comparing our notes about Dove, we might find out that we have different perceptions. If we have different perceptions of Dove, are our perceptions true? And the deeper I go into this questioning, if I do this in a very honest and very genuine way, I am going to find out that my perceptions cannot be trusted. That they're meaningless. And so once I've discovered that my perceptions cannot be trusted, I don't have to inquire into my perceptions anymore. I can begin to inquire into something else. Right? So if my perceptions can't be trusted, they aren't reality, well then what else can I inquire into? You know, maybe the next question becomes, there's this feeling that, you know, I've always been taught that I'm this body. Is that true? And I begin to look at the body and see if I'm the body. And I don't want to give that away too much because we're going to do that on Wednesday. We're going to go in and inquire into, am I the body? But if we inquire into that deeply enough, we may find, you know what? I can see, no, that's not true. I am not the body. And eventually, eventually after inquiring into, you know, many different things, my perceptions, my thoughts, am I my thoughts, my body, am I my body, the breath, am I my breath, am I my blood? I remember being taught when I was one of Jehovah's Witnesses that life was in the blood. This is why Jehovah's Witnesses will not take blood transfusions. But is that true? I think I mentioned last Wednesday during the Guiding Light that one of the questions I had was, am I the brain? And I had to look at that. Is the brain, is that what I am? Is everything that I am contained in that brain? And when that brain dies, I die. And what I found by observing the brain as it changed was that what I am did not change. The brain changed, right? So therefore, I was not the body. And as we begin to inquire, instead of just believe whatever we're told, as we begin to look and we begin to inquire, we begin to get to something that we can see is definitely me, I. And there's no way that I can say it's not me, it's not I. I can't see it outside of me like an object. It doesn't have points of view like perception and thoughts. It's changeless. Therefore, it can't be actually honest or dishonest. It just is. And through inquiry, through looking, I come to see the truth of what I am. And then if I start paying attention to that truth, instead of paying attention to what isn't true, instead of spending all of my time paying attention to my perceptions, my thoughts, you know, my body, although the body does require some care, but instead of spending all of my time being concerned about those things, if I spend more time focused on the one thing that I discover, which appears to definitely be me, what happens if I spend my time focusing on that and getting to know that? Can I learn more about what I really am? Can I learn more about the truth by focusing on the one thing that I discover to be truth, on the one thing that I couldn't discount? Right? Like I was able to discount my perceptions. They're not truth. I can see that. The one thing that I discover that is truth, can I spend more time paying attention to it, more time focused on it, and learn more and more and more about myself, what I really am. Learn more and more and more about truth. And then get to the point where I am genuinely beyond all doubt, beyond belief, knowing myself. But again, the first question is, do I have any interest in that? Do I have any interest in not believing what I'm being told, not believing what I was told by my family, not believing what I'm told by Regina, not believing what I'm told by Michael Langford, not believing whatever Craig Holiday is going to say next, not believing, but finding out for myself? Do I have genuine interest in finding out for myself? That's the question. And that leaves me out of time, so I'm going to release the mic and thank you, y'all, for hanging out with me for 30 minutes. I'll be back, by the way, after Jacqueline and Craig. See you then.